true.
You're continuing to discuss the specific topic of fetal surgery, or it really is a means of getting at particular topics that are very basic to bioethical questions. And we sort of ended off our discussion of who is the right to decide for a pediatric patient according to halacha. And we're now ready to discuss what is a far more prevalent issue, which is the issue of risk taking. If you go to page...
You got to have one, don't you?
Here you go. You get the one with...
I'll give it back.
Risk taking is a very, very significant topic for many, many different situations. Turn to page 5. I wanted you just to see, just to know where the issue begins, where the general society views the rights of a person to take risks. We mentioned it several times, autonomy. Autonomy is the very, the most significant word for a secular bioethicist. If you look on the top of page 5, they define it as one may not restrict nor negate the free wishes of an individual with respect to his own body. One must facilitate any desired action acceptable to a person's own judgment and in accordance with his own choice. That's the definition of autonomy to some degree. There's further elaboration. And then if you look at the other paragraph, many ethicists view autonomy as the most important ethical principle which supersedes all others. In recent years, and I would totally agree with this line, this is 100% true, the tendency is to decide more and more medical, ethical, and legal dilemmas according to this principle. Autonomy is everything. How does halacha feel about autonomy? So for that, I wanted you to see, I thought Rav Zevin really captures it, captures the sense of Chazal on this issue. Koach ha-chayim shel guf ha-adam einenu shelo. Almost the exact opposite, right? We do not have any sense of autonomy in halacha to the absolute degree the way the secular world does. Lo bilvad sha-adam asur la-aved es chayav. We're not just talking about suicide. Kulam o miktsasam. Ele she'ein ha-chayim halalu shelo klal. And then he gives an interesting example, which is Nogeya Halacha L'maisa Hayom. Hu mocher onosen umemashkein es basar gufo lechaticha ulektitza lemishehu hareza ki'ilu makne davar she'enu shelo she'en hakinyan nitfas klal. It's very, very interesting in light of the fact that that's an up-and-coming trend for people to be selling their organs. Hashem natan v'Hashem lakach einenu melitza shel tanchumin greidim, ele shezoi hagdarat hametziut. Just the way life is. Natan HaKadosh Baruch Hu es hachayim la'adam shishmamesh behem, aval lo shiyu knuyim lo lasos behem ke'adam ha'oseh b'toch shelo. Bottom line is, and he quotes the Baal HaTanya, it's an interesting makor for this, and then in this piece he has many makoros that it's a davar pashut, that in halacha we don't have any sense that a person gets to choose exactly what he wants to do. Where does this really come out? First, in the idea of placing oneself b'sakana, right? We all know the sugya in Bava Kama, it's aser adam lichvo ba'atzmo. A person certainly can't injure themselves, but more than that, a person can't even put themselves in a potential dangerous situation. Right? The Rambam says that a person who says, you know, I know it's dangerous, I don't care, I'm going to be willing to take the risk for myself, so he gets Malchus for that. Malchus Mardus. It's an absolute negative to ever put yourself in any risk. Is that 100% true? Is there no situation where we're allowed to take risks? Is it really that blanket and that absolute? So there are several notable exceptions to the idea that a person cannot put himself at risk. For example, the most famous appears in several Gemaras. Kevan Dadashu Beirabim, Shomer Psai Mashem, right? It's a Gemara in Nida, Adaf Lamed Aleph, Yivamos Yubeis, Shabbos Kuf Chavtes, right? Different situations where we seem to be getting involved in dangerous activity, right? In Shabbos, it's bloodletting. In Yevamos, it's the three women who shouldn't be getting pregnant, Ketanos, you know, Milberes, Nekes, and yet we say we're not going to, the Chacham and Shita there is not to use a moch, that they can just take their chances. And then Gemara Nida talks about the 90th day being a special sakana for a pregnant woman to have a to have any type of relations on that day. So how do we do it? All the answers are Kevin the Dash of Beirabim Shomer Psai Mashem. So what is the idea? Why is that an exception to putting yourself in risk? So the idea is something that is acceptable to society as something that people can do. Shomer Psai Mashem. It's really somewhat foolish to still do it, it sounds like. But since society accepts this as an acceptable societal risk, you can do it. And Shomer Psai Mashem. How much of a risk can you take for Shomer Psai Mashem is a machlokas achronim. There's a famous Rabbi Kiva Eger who seems to say, sky's the limit. Most achronim, however, say that it has to be minimal risk. Where the cutoff is, it's not really our shaila exactly today, but I think I've heard of Shechter quote 10%. As a cutoff for that, but really he says that if it's greater than 50%, you certainly can't take the risk. If it's between 10 and 50, it's up to the individual to decide, is this considered for you personally a sakana? If it is, then you shouldn't do it. If it's not, then you can do it. And less than 10, batul daito itzoko adam, that's not considered really a significant risk. Whatever, that's one major category of exception. What's another one? Anyone know another category of exception to taking risks? Where else can you take this? Right? Parnasa. This is a Gemara of Nitzia, Daf Kufi Beis. The Gemara over there is talking about Hakovesh Schar Sfer, a person who doesn't pay his worker, so it's Ki'ilu Notel Es Nafsha. He's involved in taking his life to some degree. Why? Because the Gemara explains, well, here's a person going up on a tree, going up on a roof, risking his life, right, just so he can have his day's pay, and you're not paying him. So, but the issue we're concerned with is not the Dinamonis issue, it's really though, what's he doing up on the tree, risking his life? So here we see another exception, that for Parnassa, you can take a risk. You can take little risks. And the famous Shul of Novi Yehuda, when it comes to hunting, made use of this. He said, hunting is really something that's a risk, no Jew should be involved in it. However, if it's for your Parnassa, so the Novi Yehuda was allowed, gave latitude in that area of taking the risk for parnasa. Remember, Rabbi Tendler, when he discussed this topic, he mentioned that the Dor HaFlaga, what was the Aveira of the Dor HaFlaga? So one view is that their mistake was that they didn't want to go out and be Mesakei Olam. They didn't want to take the chance that was necessary for mankind to move forward. And at times, for the purpose of progress, you have to take a little bit of a risk. And that was their mistake, that they didn't, they weren't willing to take that little risk. They wanted it safe and not have to get involved in any risk at all. One more very famous category of exception, right? This is Gemara Mitzachim and Afches. Is Shluchei Mitzvah and Anizak. Right? If you're involved in a mitzvah, as long as the Hezek is not Shchiach, as long as it's not an absolutely high-level risk, and again, the cutoffs will be somewhere along the lines I mentioned before, then, again, you have some type of extra protection because you're involved in a mitzvah. So those are the most well-known exceptions to the absolute rule that a person is not allowed to put themselves at risk. There's two other possible exceptions that are negated to us. One is, what if you are risking chaye sha'a for chaye olam? That's the first one we're going to focus on right now. I'm certainly putting myself at risk. Right? Because Chai Shah, what's Chai Shah? Let's say we define it as less than 12 months, is still very, very significant. Right? We know this from the fact that you could be Mechalal Shabbos for somebody who only has the potential for Chai Shah. Right? And a person who kills a goses, yishofech dami, even though that goses only has chayisha. Chayisha is chayim. So to say that you can risk it is a chiddush. Why can I risk it? Possibly if I have a possibility of achieving chayi olam. So that's the one that's really negated to our fetus over here. Our fetus, who we are determining in our original case, has a 90% chance of dying by 1 month of age, which is chayisha. All he has is chayisha. I want to do a procedure where I might take away that chayisha, risk it, in order to perhaps give chayi olam. Is it mutter to do that?
Is it impossible to take a fetus out and do the operation and put it like this? Do it actually live?
The one we were talking about is not done that way. It's always better not to take the fetus out. The more you keep the fetus in, the better it is. You would, but it's very, very difficult to maintain the fetus outside of the uterus. Very difficult thing to do. You'd rather not do that. There are certain surgeries we do because you can't do them any other way, but this, actually, the odds are better for the fetus if you keep them or her inside. So, what does the halacha say about such a choice between chayisha and chayom? So, this all comes down to one seemingly simple sugya on page 6. Right? The whole discussion, and there's a tremendous discussion of this issue, it all focuses on this one sugya in Avodah Zarah. So, I want to do it with you, and we can see how the Achronim analyze it in very different ways and come out with pretty different conclusions. Amar Rava, everyone with me on page 6? Amar Rava, Amar Yochanan, the Amrila, Amar Avchisva, Amar Yochanan. Safek Chai, Safek Meis, Ein Misrapim Mehem. What is this talking about? A person who may live and may die if you do nothing. They may survive without any treatment. They may not. Let's call it 50-50. Ein misrapin mehen. What's that talking about? Anyone familiar with this Gemara at all? Right? You cannot get refuah from who? From a non-Jew. Okay? From an akum. Why not? Presumably because we're afraid they're going to kill you. And if there's a 50% chance you're going to survive, don't go to the akum who's likely to kill you. Vadai meis. However, if 100% you're going to die, misrapin mehem, then you can go to them. Why? Well, what do you stand to lose? You're definitely going to die, so you might as well give it a shot. Maybe they won't kill you. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. Vadai meis. This is missing from, that's what the little Aleph is telling you. Vadai meis. Misrapin mehem. V'ha'ika chayisha. Wait a second, you're going to tell me, just because I'm definitely going to die, but let's say I'm definitely going to die in 30 days, and if I go to them, they might kill me right away. So don't I have to be choshesh for my chayisha? Aren't I giving up that month? So the Gemara answers, l'chaye sha'a lo chayshinan. In this type of case, where you are definitely going to die within a month, you want to go for the possibility of chayi olam, so you're allowed not to be choshesh for the chayisha. Take the chance. How do I know that's true? Because that's not so intuitive that that would be the conclusion. Umina tamra de l'chayisha lo chayshinan dechsev, and they quote from the story of the four Mitzrayim in Malachim Beis that were outside the city. Aram was attacking and put a siege around the city. There was a Rav, everybody was starving. The people inside the city were starving. The Metzorayim were starving outside the city. And they said the following: Imar Marnu Navo Ha'ir V'Arav Ba'ir Umasnu. If we decide to go into the city and we'll die just like everyone else there who's starving, the Masnu Sham. And if you look in Rashi, he gives the full part of the Nach. Im yashavnu po masnu, and if we stay right here, we'll also die. For sure, we're going to starve. V'ata l'chuv v'nafla el machane aram. our best bet, let's just go over to the enemy camp. Im yachyunu v'nichya. V'im yamitunu umasu. We'll take our chances there, right? And everybody sees the analogy. Here they are. They might live a few more days in starvation, right? But in the Nach, we see that these four Mitzrayim, whoever they were, and we'll find out who they were in a few minutes, decided that the best bet is take our chances, even though we might get killed right away by the enemy, but maybe they'll feed us and they'll let us live. Based on this sugya, what would you say is the psak? Can you risk chayisha for chayol? What do you say?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Seems pretty pashut, right? Right? And that's what the Rambam says, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, and that's what everybody says. But there's one problem. How useful is this in the real world? What's missing at face value here? Try to decide our case on the basis of this Gemara and tell me what you would say. It says, well, I can put myself in a position of risking immediate death, forget about Chayei Shah, in order to possibly be a Chayei Olam. What's one critical bit of information that's not apparent? Anybody?
How you define
Chayei Shah?
How you define Chayei Shah?
Okay, not Chayei Shah, that's how you define something, right? Chayei Shah, we'll say, is a year, okay? The Chayei have different cases. The Achiezer talks about a period of 6 months, Shriz Yaakov talks about a few days, Rav Moshe and the later Achronim come to the conclusion it's a year. Okay? Chayisha is not going to be the problem. But what is a problem is in the real life, in the real world, there's one critical factor that must be considered. How much risk are you allowed to take? In other words, I'm telling you that the procedure on this fetus has over a 90% chance that we're going to kill that fetus right away. Is that what this Gemara is talking about? That type of risk? 90% or greater, right? Or maybe there has to be reasonable risk, 50-50. That's the machlokas in contemporary Achronim. Rav Moshe, Rav Waldenberg, both say 50-50, no more. From this sugya, they conclude the most chance that you're allowed to take is a 50-50 chance. If the procedure, like our procedure, would be a no-brainer for them. Our procedure, no way, you can't do that. 90% chance that you're going to die? Absolutely awesome. The Achiezer, and what seems to be Pashup Shah to all of you, say, sky's the limit. Right? Sky is the limit. Why did you say that? Was there anything in the sugya itself that led you that way? There is one line that's really mashma. Sky's the limit. Yes, that's exactly what the Achiezer says. The Chayisha lo chayshina, that's mashma. We just forget about it. We don't make any equations in the setting of a potential chance at Chayola. So how does Rav Moshe, right? How does Rav Moshe come to his conclusion 50-50? How does Rav Waldenberg come to that conclusion? So I wanted to just show you the very, very complicated analysis that Rav Moshe derives. Thirdly, Kedah. This is one of those sugyas I wish that I could have given you the Gemara, look it over, look at Rashi, take a little time, and then we'll do the sugya together, but we'll just have to make do. So, let's see exactly what we can milk out of this sugya. Right? This is Rav Moshe at his best. Right? He didn't, his psak was not built on precedent of other achronim, of other psak. It was built on his own very, very intricate analysis of a sugya. So what does he do here? He says the following, right? Safek chai meis. What's the din? Ein misrapim. So let's analyze that. Why not? Give me two possibilities right now, okay? We're calling them possibility A, possibility B. We're calling this 50-50 that you're going to live or die, right? That's what it sounds like, Safik Chai, Safik Neis. 50-50, you'll live or die if you do nothing. Ain misrapin man. Why not? I have a 50-50 chance of dying. So there's two possibilities. One is, right? By the way, what does Rashi say? Let me just tell you. He gives a reason, right? Rashi says, Vadai, right? Right? The death is going to kill you. Vadai. We have to... Couldn't really mean Vadai, right? Why could it not really mean literally Vadai? Because then in the second case, when we said Vadai Mace, there's no point. You know, Vadai Mace here, Vadai Mace there. Had to be rove, like a rove. That's what he meant, a real rove. Okay. So that's one possibility. Let's call that one possibility. One possibility is the reason 50-50, I choose not to use it because the odds are greater here that I'm going to die. That's what it's about, right? Don't give up your 50% chance of living because you're going to have only a 10% if you go that way. Okay? That's one possibility, right? We'll call it Rashi. What was the other possibility? Let's say this was 50-50. What would have been your psak, right? So one way of looking at it is, wait, let's not do that. Confusing. Let's say 50-50 against 50-50. So from the one perspective, you could say, well, look, 50-50 here, okay. 50-50 here, I might get chayei olam, right? So, what should I do? So, in general, we say Sheval Taset, right? Why? A lot of reasons. Sheval Taset because, number one, when they say 50-50 that you'll get a cure, that's assuming that everybody in the world reacts the same to cures. The truth is, there's something called idiosyncratic reactions, which means that, you know, 90% of the population handles this medication just fine, and 99, I should say, and 1% doesn't. So maybe you're part of that 1%. That's what Rav Moshe says, actually. He didn't use the word idiosyncratic, but that's what he's talking about. In medicine, we recognize the same thing. Some people just have a bad reaction to medication. So he says, maybe you're going to be one of those. What else? If you stay here, who? By what means did the person expire? Bidei? Shamayim. If you go here, bidei Adam. Better bidei Shamayim than bidei Adam. Right? Everyone could agree with that? So, Rav Moshe says that this would have been the most pashut pshat. Savik chai, savik meis, ein misrapin ben, because even assuming 50-50, you would still elect not to use the aqua. And yet, what does Rashi do? Rashi picks this pshat. Why? What compelled Rashi to make it a case of vadai katil, to make it like this almost pshita case? Why? The din would have been this. This is the din. By the way, in another advantage of analyzing Rav Moshe in detail is you get other psak out of it. It's like Rav Moshe is telling you when it's 50-50 versus 50-50, Shevatasa. But instead, Rashi chooses this pshat. So Rav Moshe says it's obvious what pushed him that way. What's the sefer? Vadai Meis, Misrapin. What does Vadai Meis mean? Unlike this Vadai is absolute, 100%. 100%. Meaning what? Let's say it's 90%. 90% you're going to die. What's the din? Ein misrapin. If there's any chance at all, any mere chance, that you can survive without going into the risky situation, chayshinan v'chayisha. The Gemara is telling you, according to Rav Moshe, badai meis means you can only get involved in risking chayisha if it's 100% that you're gone. Okay? Now, anyone figure out Rashi yet? This is 100%. Whatever the odds were here, in this case, are the odds here also, right? Whatever the odds were that Ein Misraf Menehem, those are the odds that are facing me when I get the Hetter to be Misraf. So let's say we had gone with what seemed to be the basic Pashup Shah, 50-50 versus 50-50, we would still say Ein Misraf Menehem. How would that translate down here? That would mean, despite the fact that it's 100% I'm going to die, and here it's only 50-50, right? And what if it was 90%? And it was 50-50. 90% I'm going to die if I do nothing. But if I go to the Akum, it's 50-50. What would be your upside? What would your logic tell me? If I do nothing, I have a 90% chance I'm going to die. If I go get this refuah, I have a 50% chance I'm going to live. What would you do? Definitely go, right? That would be pashut. Pashut. So why does it have to be 100%? So the pshat is because it's not 50-50. It's vadai katal. This is what compelled Rashi. Right? You have to think about this for a while. I had a long time to think about this. You guys have about 3 minutes to absorb it. Okay? But it's because this is so absolute. The only heter that's going to be to get involved in the refuah, right, is 100%. 90%, I'm still not allowed to do it. Why? Because this is considered, let's say, 90%. 90%, right, rov is that they're going to kill me. Badai katalei. What would be the psak 90% against 90%? Be the same as 50% against 50%. Again, Sheva Al Taz say you fall back on all this. Therefore, Rashi was compelled to say there's only one scenario where it has to be 100%. That's the scenario where Rov cases, this Akum would kill you. That's the starting point for the notion. That's the easy part. Okay? Now, where would you take it from here?
I have two questions. Mm-hmm. So one is, you said a minute ago that better be killed by Shemayim than by Adam. So
if all things are equal.
Right. So
all things are equal.
Is that, if all things are equal, that's an infinitesimal amount that shifts? Or can you say, like, it's 91-90, then that's worth
1%? Yeah. No, I mean, it's never that.
I mean, it's always
never that. It's never that far.
I'm right.
It doesn't work that way. But, right. Basically, 91-90 would be the same as 90-90, probably.
Okay.
Right? Anytime the percentages are the same, we fall back on this, usr. Sheva al
tasr. Okay. The other question is, isn't it odd that Rashi chooses to understand Badai in the Gemara as 100%, but then he uses it in his parish to be less than that?
Right. So, Rashi doesn't say anything about this. This is Rav Hirsch's analysis.
Right. Oh, so, gosh.
Everybody has to say Rashi could not possibly have meant
100%. But if he, which is fine,
right?
But then
couldn't be
why
100.
You say it, you can say
right.
That.
So
you're saying that, but he understands the word vada.
Rav Moshe quote says pashup shat. He does not explain pashup shat of vadai meis. It had to be 100%, and he paskins. And then therefore, if it's less than 100%, the indication of this gemara is if it wasn't vadai, the expression of the gemara vadai meant that it was inevitable. So they're telling you anything less than inevitable, it was usher for you to get involved, right? That's what forced everybody to say it must be that the risk was so high that it really was not until you get to 100% that I'm allowed to get involved. That is the nekuda that forced Rashi to say vaday. And again, I agree with you. The same word.
This is very obvious.
It's very. We don't like to do that. We don't like to give the very same word. One's in the Gemara, one's in Rashi. That gives us a little more latitude with that, right?
Right.
The Gemara itself.
Rashi, you know, Rashi understands it in the Gemara one way and then uses it himself.
Well, it's like it's an impossibility, right? It's an impossibility for Rashi to be giving shot other than
right.
Say, rove. Right. Okay, granted. Nevertheless, so if we got to the end of the sugya, I hope you understand it. The bottom line on this analysis is it's getting to the fact that the Gemara was telling you the risk we're allowed to take is a very high risk. If it's vade meis, meaning vade, all I have is chaye shah, that's all I have, with certainty, then pashut pshat at this point is like the achiezer, right? Then the Gemara is telling me that even though the risk of going to the Akum is as high as 90%, since it's 100%, lechaisha lo chashila, I don't have to worry about it. Just like the Achiezer. That's what I would have, that's, even with Ramosha's analysis of Rashi and all of it, I still would have stopped at this point and said, okay, that's exactly what the Achiezer is trying to tell you. That really, Misrafim had meant I could take a 90% risk. What do I stand to lose? 100%, I only have chaisha. Right? Everyone understand that? That would have been the end of everything. But Rav Moshe does something really fascinating here. He dissects this Gemara to the nth degree. And I'll leave that there for a second. He says, wait a second. Let's really analyze this Gemara. What does it mean that if I go to an Akum, they're going to kill me? What does it mean they're going to kill me? Is that really true? Let's talk about even Medina de Gemara. Forget about nowadays. Right? Although Rav Moshe seems to include even nowadays to some degree. He says, but even Bisman HaGemara, is it true that 90% of the non-Jewish doctors would kill us? What is that? What's the MS, Rav Moshe says? He says, at worst, 50% of them really want to kill you. The other 50% are trying to make a business, right? It's not good for their reputation. What kind of doctor, who's going to go to a doctor who's known to kill every Jew that comes in? So, he says, really, Stam Akum, right? And you see where he's going way beyond Pashut Pshat and Gemara, he's really analyzing the meaning of the Gemara. So, Stam Akum has a 50% chance, 50-50, to kill you or to really try to cure you. So why, what is it, Rove, the way Rashi puts it, Vadai Katile, why is it Rove will kill you? So Rav Moshe says the Rove comes from something else. The Rove comes from something that's true about all doctors. I hate to say it, right? He says, there's at the end of the Masechus Kiddushin, right? Tov Shberov from the Gehenim, right? What's Pshat according to Maharsha, to Rashi, Tosas V'Yazokim? If you look at all of them, the common denominator of Pshat on that is because they kill people. Whether it be because they didn't make enough effort, they made mistakes. The truth of the matter is, even the best Jewish doctor kills people. So you couple that now to this, right? 50% want to kill you. 50% don't want to kill you. Of the 50% that don't want to kill you, a certain percentage are going to kill you anyway. Based on that, Rav Moshe says, we have Rove Refue Akum to kill it. Now, what does he gain by analyzing it in this fashion? What's he building here? Yeah, as you're reading the truth, you say, wow, what on earth is he getting at? So he says like this. Rov Akum is the 50 plus that unknown percentage that are just going to kill it. He says, now you have to be machalic in the following way. When you want to analyze what situation you're allowed to go to this Akum, so he says that if 100% you're going to die, you're going to only have Chayisha, you're going to die within a month, you are then allowed to go to the Akum despite the fact that Rove Akum, based on this calculation, will kill you. Okay? So if that Akum, now you go to the Akum and he says, I have the refuah, it will cure you. I tell you, I'm sure of it, it's going to cure you. Mutter, you can go there. Why? Well, why can I go to any doctor? Why do I go to a Jewish doctor if there's a possibility he's going to kill me? Why can I go? Well, Yerapa Yerapa, right? That might be Pshat, Yerapa Yerapa. You can go to doctors and they can cure you even though they might kill you. Or, what we just said, even though their doctors are all a bunch of killers, but we can go to them anyway, because this percentage of killers, right, society accepts it. So that's what Moshe says is going on over here. The only reason you can go to this Akum, well, that 90% doesn't sound so convincing anymore, right? Whatever the percentage is, the 50 plus, you can go to this Akum because just like you're allowed to ignore by Jewish doctors the percentage that will be killing you even though they don't want to, So too with an akum, that additional percentage you can ignore. You can ignore the percentage of non-Jewish doctors who really don't want to kill you but might end up doing it anyway. Where does that bring you back? 50-50. So what does Rav Moshe say? That's the absolute maximum you can derive from the sugya risk you're allowed to take. Because, in truth, even by an akum all along, despite Rashi's expression, vadai katile, to me this is the weakest part of Rav Moshe's pshat, even though Rashi uses that expression, vadai katile, Rav Moshe says the emes is, all we're really saying is they have a 50% chance of killing. And the Vadai was this rove, which was created by that extra percentage that of all doctors that kill people anyway. However, if that non-Jewish doctor would say to you, you know what? There's a suffix about the refuah itself. So that adds on percentage points that you can't ignore. And that would be asr. Because you're going over the 50%. But Moshe's conclusion, and he thinks that most achronim analyze it the same way, is to make this chiluk between a rov akum who's sure of the procedure and not sure of the procedure, 50% chance. Anything over that, it's usher for a person to take a chance. Our fetus, according to Rav Moshe, he certainly couldn't do it. Certainly could not do it, even if the chances of him only having chai shara were 100%. You couldn't do it because you got to stop at 50%. The Achiezer says no. Pashut Pshat is none of this stuff, not this chiluk. He says the Gemara is teaching me that there's a 90% chance, there's a high probability of this guy killing you. And nevertheless, what do you got to lose? Chaisha, it's almost if we really continuing the eon, which I will mercifully stop. Right? We would start to say the nekudas hamachlok is what's the value of chaisha? Do you view chaisha totally equally to chay olam? Or when we say l'chashina, like the Achayez are saying, it means that it's nothing. Rav Moshe says, no, it's still something, right? It's a whole analysis you can make. But we're not interested in that right now. L'maisa, what comes out is the Achayez says you can take any chance. Sky's the limit. Now, also halach l'maisa is, what about, is it, let's say you have 50-50 for Rav Moshe, and sky's the limit for the Achayez. Does that mean it's mutter or yachayev to do it? Do I have to risk my chai sha when I have the possibility of achieving chai olam? Right? That's a real halach l'maisa shot. So Rav Moshe says, what would you say based on the Gemara? What did the Gemara say? Rav Moshe is always going to go back to this Gemara. What's the mashma'ut? Poshib shah in the Gemara. Somebody tell me. Anyone see the key line? Look at the line that gives you the het there to get involved. What's the expression used? Vada meis misrapim meh. What's that much? Chiyuv or mutter?
Mutter,
definitely. Misrapim meh, yes, you can do it if you want to. And Rav Moshe points out, you also, from the example, what's the source of this whole halacha? Those four mitzoraim that were outside the city. Who are they? Anyone know who those four mitzoraim were?
Gehazi.
Gehazi, right? Who was Gehazi? A good guy or a bad guy? Very bad guy, right? Gemara Sanhedrin says he's one of the people who's not getting the Olam Haba, right? Bad. So Rav Moshe says, since when do we determine halacha on the basis of what a person who's not making it to Olam Haba does? That's going to make a chiyuv. So what's the Gemara doing? So he says, the Gemara, what do you think the Gemara is doing? Anybody? What's the Gemara giving me an example with a bunch of Rishayim? What's the advantage? What's the point? It's obviously not that this is a great Talmud Chacham who's setting the halacha example, right? So what is it? So, anyway, what possibly could it be? There's only one thing it could be. This is a normal human decision. People sometimes make this decision. That's what Moshe says. That's what this is expressing. That this isn't crazy. Sometimes people are willing to choose a gamble at Chayi Olam and give up Chayi Shah. That's what we're seeing from them. No more, no less. Certainly not a Chiyuv. So based on Misrapin Mehen and the fact that the example is Gehazi, Rav Moshe paskins that you may do it at 50-50, but you certainly don't have to. Comes along with Shlomo Zalman and he says, totally disagree. Totally disagree. Number one, there's a Yerushalmi that says Gehazi was a big Talmud Chacham, right? So perhaps that is really what we're seeing Muhammad Chacham Gekazi at work, right? And he says that once it's mutter, we've decided it's mutter, then you have a chiyuv because of pikuach nefesh to do this. The big question, though, is what I don't know is does Rishon Zalman agree with Rav Moshe or the Achiezer on the risk? In a 50-50 case, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman would say, you're chayiv to do it. In the 90% type, that the Ezra's type, where he's saying even if the risk is tremendous, it's unclear from what I've seen, right? I'm still looking into it. It's unclear from what I've seen in print what Rav Shlomo Zalman would say. Would he really agree to that? That if you have a 90% chance of immediate death, you're chayiv to put yourself into that position and give up a couple of months, up to 11, 12 months? I find that very difficult. So, I don't know. But I think that within Rav Moshe, I think that's where this comment that I saw, it was a footnote in Nishmas Avraham, where he mentions Rav Shlomo Zalman said, if he was commenting on this, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, no, you'd be chayiv. Once it's mutter, you're chayiv mishum pikuach nefesh. And then there's just one more fact on this, and then we'll finish with this topic. What about a case where this, unfortunately, I've seen several times, it's at the desperate last minute, right? This person has got less than a day. You know, hours left to live, and you can do this one last heroic thing that might kill him right away, or it could be the miraculous cure. So would Rav Moshe even say, right, not to go for it no matter what the odds are? So Rabbi Bleich quotes Rav Moshe without, and I could not find a specific makor for this, where Rav Moshe says that. He doesn't say it in the main piece that he talks about this issue, but he says Rav Moshe would agree, he'd be moda in that case, when death is imminent, go for broke. Right? And that's another very important halacha nice for doctors. Sometimes you're faced with that, and if you're thinking, oh, Rav Moshe said it's got to be 50-50, right, you know you got like a 5% chance to save this guy. You really want to do it because he's about to die in like another 2 hours. It seems like, oh, come on. So Rabbi Bleich says, Beferish, that Rav Moshe was okay with that. I'm not sure of the Makor, if he said it to him or if he saw it somewhere. Questions? So in summary,
I just want to know, what's the threshold in the medical profession for risk? How is this defined, first of all? Second of all, let's say, according to medical ethics, right, is there any threshold?
They're not the same answers to that question. It's interesting. Meaning, I'm not talking to myself. I'm talking to my experience with other doctors. How does a typical, let's say, non-profit-minded doctor think about something like this? Usually, they have the mindset, you know, they don't have the respect for Chaisha, the halachic-minded doctor. So they're saying, look, I mean, you can be cured. Just go for it. Even when the odds are against it. Right? In other words, they would go like the Achiezer to some degree without thinking through like the Achiezer. To them, what's Chaisha? There's nothing. You know, who wants to live for a few weeks? But what happens with Isa, what really happens in practice, is this type of situation, they'll always pull the family in to make a decision. No doctor is going to be that, in one hand, stupid and arrogant to take that upon himself to make that decision. First of all, they'll get sued. You know, there's all kinds of nice obstacles to doing it. I know how they're thinking, though. The typical secular doctor is thinking, you know, without respect to Chaisha. It doesn't have the meaning that it does for us. Medical ethicists will give 100, as we said, percent autonomy to the patient. Whatever the patient wants. I don't care about any other logic. I don't care about any other ethics. Patient decides this type of thing 100%, which is good for us, because then we get to look at it halachically and make the decision intelligently. But it really, there's a big difference in psak here that comes out in the real world. This 50% thing, in general, the odds are not like that. The odds are more like Achiezer odds. So you have to decide. You know, Moshe is saying it's us to do it. He's saying the respect for Chaisha. What's Moshe really saying? Chaisha is so significant, I can't just risk it. Right? I need at least a 50% chance. Right? Otherwise, I can't. And the Achiezer says, no. Chaisha is significant in a vacuum, but compared to Chayolam, you are allowed to risk it. And that's a big difference in outcome. And you really need the patient's family to get a psak and figure out what they want to do in that type of situation.
We're just in a desperate situation. We're telling us that a marshal is chayav, or is still
rishus. Rishus. Oh, and that last one?
Yeah,
I think you would say rishus. Meaning, the way Rabbi Black presents him is you may. So I don't know the Makor, so I can't answer it for real. In other words, I didn't see it in Moshe's original writing where he dealt with that situation. Rabbi Black, as like in a last sentence when he's discussing this whole topic, or somewhere in the article, he mentions that in a case where death is imminent, so Reb Moshe said that in that case, you know, you're allowed to take whatever chance. I think he used that as originally allowed. Take whatever chance you can. Are you chayev? Definitely didn't use that lashon, and I would assume that Reb Moshe wouldn't use that lashon. Because it's a question of hours that somebody, let's say, makes the equation, you know, I need these hours. There's only a 5% chance that I'm really going to survive. I need these extra hours to do tshuva or whatever. So I can't believe that it would be chayav for that person to give up those hours, according to Reb Moshe. Right? But I don't know for sure. I didn't see it in some that specific point. What Reb Moshe was talking about until now was not imminent death. It was like chayisha, a few days, a few months, that kind of thing. If you have that, you know, that was his psak 50-50. Definitely, it's mutter, it's not achiv. This last point was the chiddush that he will be moded to the achiezer that you can take a big time chance if death is imminent then. But that you must, my inclination would be to believe that that would not be a must thing to do. Alright. So what we were supposed to do, and we will quickly, just briefly overview, is the final issue when it comes to this risk taking. There's one other possibility of a heter of risk taking. And that is when you're taking a risk in order to save somebody else's life. Because right? Who's doing that? In our case, the mother. Subjecting the mother to surgery is putting her at some degree of risk. Where is this really an issue? Bone marrow transplant, kidney transplant, those type of questions. That's the issue. Am I allowed? Am I chayiv? Or is it usur for me to donate a kidney to somebody else? That's the question. Poskim come out with each of those three possibilities. All right, actually, we're going to stop. And what we'll do in 2 weeks when we come back, is we'll focus on that issue. And why it is that there's such differing perspectives, right? Rav Moshe says mutter, Tzitzel Ezer says aser, Rav Avad Yosef says, with some clarification necessary, you're basically chayav. And we're talking about kidney donation, bone marrow donation. All right, we'll take it from there. Taking on first session to respect was Kayla and Joshua Rabin.